Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're going to talk about those trailers. So if you haven't watched the Fantastic Four trailer or the Jurassic World trailer, maybe don't listen. I don't know. I it's weird to be like spoilers for trailers. But, you know, if you're trying to go into something completely non, like knowing nothing, then we're going to spoil it talking about the trailer. I so desperately wanted to catch up with, like, Spider-Man this week, because they dropped more episodes, which...
They dropped three! That was wild!
They have confirmed it is coming back for two more seasons. So we're gonna have three seasons. So, that's a plus, but also, God, they burn off episodes at such a clip, and... Like, I would have probably had a chance to sit down and watch one episode, but I was like, I don't have time for three episodes, because not only three episodes of Spider-Man, Invincible is back. It dropped a bunch of episodes. I did watch the most of the first episode of Invincible. I didn't get to finish it, but I got about 10 minutes left. It is... still firing on all cylinders. Like, it's starting slow, and it looks like it's going to build, which is pretty much what that show has done.
Yeah, like, the second season, like, I mean, at least they didn't do, like, at least we know we're getting a full season, and they're not going to fuck, they're not going to do the fuckery of,
like, season two? Yeah.
Yeah, which really ruined, like, I think that for a lot of people,
it hurt a lot. Really, it hurt them a lot. I really, like, I don't think they realized how much that was, like, the original break, like, with everything that happened, you can kind of, like, shrug your shoulders and be like, I mean, they wound up having to deal with a lot more than they thought they were going to have to deal with.
Yeah.
But when you have a 3.5 year break between seasons, and then you deliver half of a season, and really kind of, like, for a show that's not going to give you a lot of episodes anyway, it felt like a slap in the face to a lot of fans. And I mean, the show is it's still, you know, up there, it's still being talked about, but, like, they're probably gonna have to use a lot of goodwill to be like, hey, yeah, no, we screwed up. Like, we're sorry.
Yeah.
Here's three episodes. You're getting a full run this year. There's not going to be a break, you know.
Yeah. It's just the narrative drive goes completely out of it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's the way that you probably feel about Cobra Kai, with all these breaking up of the season, when it's just like, just do the whole narrative run. It's the final season. I know you're trying to suck the marrow out of the bone at this point.
Yeah. With it being the final season, it feels a little less important, you know, because it's like, well, this is all we're going to get. So, you know, if they did take two breaks, like, okay, well, I'm still going to get the finale. With Invincible, it's more like Amazon at any point could just be like, nah, man. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
And we're not going to get any more of the story. I mean, we've seen Warner Brothers do it time and time again, which, did you see, I can't think of his freaking name. Last Man on Earth.
Jim. Good grief, I can't think of his name. I want to call him. I want to call him Jim, but it's not Jim. MacGruber.
Will Forte.
Will Forte. And his
tweet and go about, after Warner Brothers.
Yep. About Acme versus Coyote versus Acme. Well, I mean, especially okay. So, like, here's the thing about that one. Just side tangent. It's like, so you have a like. I think what pissed him off was not just because they work so hard and everybody says it's a fantastic movie, but it's the fact that they're releasing.
You still have a movie coming out. Yeah, yeah.
They have a fucking other movie coming out. Like, they have an animated, like a PG-13-ish, like animated, like Looney Tunes movie. And I'm like, you have every right to be upset about this.
Yeah.
Because
it's not like, oh shit, the Looney Tunes brand, like it is not the Disney brand. It is not pulling money. Like, unfortunately, we got to shelve all this stuff. It's just not financially doable for us. No, instead, you have another Looney Tunes movie coming out, and this one got shelved, and every single person that has seen it has been like, oh, it's brilliant, man.
Yeah. That's the thing, is that, like... Like, I just don't, like, this is where it's, like, fuckery about, right? Like, you just, like, what are you doing? Like, literally, what are you doing?
This is why, like, real world stuff aside, like, actual real world shittiness aside, but, like, if you or I were a billionaire, Adam.
Yeah.
Multi-billionaire. It would be like, well, no. We're gonna buy this and we'll just put it out because we want to see it and we want everybody. Like, it sounds like a weird, like, kind of pop culture Batman thing, but like, that's what is really frustrating about all of this is like, you have these assholes coming in buying these studios, and it's just like, hey man, like, if you want to be like for the people, then give.
But they don't want to be. They don't want to be. It's like their own little Lego set.
It's Martin Shkreli buying that fucking Wu-Tang album, being like, nobody's ever going to hear it. Like, okay, man, which, you know, speaking of, I don't know if you saw that either. Announcement. New Wu-Tang coming. First album in 10 years.
Yes. Like, fucking hell, dude. Like we need bright spots like that
right now.
And to your point, it's like the fuckery is abound. Like, and there's no reason for it. Like, last weekend, we were texting after the podcast, and I texted you about a movie that I was watching. You're cordially invited, which is an Amazon streaming. Speaking of Amazon, fuck Bezos, that piece of shit. I sat there and I was like, okay, like, I'm genuinely shocked because Nick Stoller, who's the director of the movie, has made an actual movie in like a comedy that was shot in widescreen that's refined. And yeah, you know what? It's a mid movie because it's a very predictable movie. You kind of know what's going to happen. But I can tell you, like, there are some, like, if I'm at home by myself or with my wife and I'm sitting there and I'm fucking laughing, I know that there's genuine, like, infectious laughter to this movie. Like, and it's not like a movie that, like, this is like a crowd pleaser where anywhere in America, because of the way that it's like, it's got this, like, potential of being a really, like, a funny movie for everybody because it's dealing with, like, multiple different kinds of families and a wedding. And it's just, like, it's a lot of fun, right? And I'm sitting there and like about midway through when there's this like this really like there's this hilarious scene and I'm laughing and I'm like and I stop and I go, why the fuck isn't this in a theater? Why am I not right now tonight, Saturday night, out with my wife in a packed house laughing at this fucking movie?
I mean, so like for anybody like if Nick Stoller doesn't ring a bell, so you, like this is where the guy's first movie is Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yes.
Then, you get the Get Him to the Greek spinoff, which was not the success that Sarah Marshall was, but certainly a moderate success. The 5-year engagement, Neighbors 2. Storks is probably the one, like, he made an animated movie and it didn't light up the box office.
Yeah.
But then he's also had moderate success on TV. Like, well, yes. Streaming TV. Friends from College was, like, a talked-about show on Netflix. Like, I think it only got the 13 episodes. But, like, it would show up in my, like, most watched stuff that, yeah. You know, when it dropped. So, I didn't see Platonic, though.
Platonic was okay. Like it was okay.
The Apple Plus show, right? With yes. Seth Rogen?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay. Like, it's a little too much, like, it wants to be Annie Hall when it can't be Annie Hall, if that makes sense. Like, yeah. Like, I know that makes sense to you, and we won't have the witty conversation, but it's like, it's trying to approach rom-com from a different angle, and I always feel like, unless you're a really brilliant, like, unless you're like a next level talent where we know your name and we've known your name since the beginning of your first like movie, you can't do that with rom-coms. It's like, back the fuck up and like, don't try to do the formula, because all it's going to do is just go, okay, well, you tried it and you failed and you like, and that's what like, that's how I felt about that movie.
A Father of the Bride-esque comedy from a guy who has proven box office success with two proven box office stars. Yes, not every Will Ferrell movie lights up the box office, but when he's in something that's not his batshit crazy stuff, like when he's under somebody else's wing, then, I mean, he has success. He has box office success. And Reese Witherspoon was, a box office champ 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Like, I know that's a long time, especially in Hollywood, but it's still like, and I'm sure we were talking about this before we hit record, but I said, I'm sure more people watch it on streaming than they do in the theater, but you have that money already. Like, those people are already subscribed. I don't understand dumping, you know, $50 million into a movie.
Yeah, that could have made 80. Like, I could see this movie, like, if you promote it right and you do it around like April, you're making $80 to $100 million. And yeah. It's like, and then you get the whole thing of like, oh, it's a real movie because it's being released in theaters. And then you get the whole hype of that was released in theater. Like, it's the A24 model, right?
Yeah.
Like, nobody is going to see an A24 streaming movie, but everybody's going to watch the A24 movie that was released in theaters that everybody raved about, even if it's a movie that's not yours. The
only ones that really, like, understand... I mean, it sounds weird because it is an old model of, like, rolling out a movie, because you had to have a print of a movie. The prints were expensive, so a movie wasn't always playing. Like, you had a limited number of prints, so a theater would only have that print for so many weeks, and then it would move to a different territory. And, I mean, we're talking about decades and decades ago. Mm-hmm. But, you know, with the new models, like, it's just they tap into a server and, like, that's it.
Yeah.
Unless you're, like, a true IMAX. But,
even then, IMAX Digital has the same thing. Like, unless you're the Brutalist, right? And, like, I don't know, man. Like, it's like the
A24 does that. Like, it's like, we're not going to wide open this movie that nobody's going to come in droves to see. Because, nobody's coming in droves to the theaters much at all anymore. But,
no.
B, like, these are not those kind of movies, but you have, like, Everything Everywhere All at Once a few years ago, starting super small, and it builds and builds and builds and builds and builds, and then, you know, it makes $120 million at the box office, which is really big for a movie like that, you know?
Absolutely.
And it's not like your marketing isn't front loaded, it's actually back loaded. The more like you don't have to spend a lot of marketing up front because you're opening small. And then as the movie grows and word of mouth grows, then your marketing grows, but you're making more money.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like a movie like okay, so like take for instance, there are two movies that came out. There are A24 movies that came out in December, The Brutalist and Baby Girl. Baby Girl is literally a riff on a psychosexual thriller, right? Something we don't get anymore. An R-rated psychosexual thriller. It's made $30 million. Like, yeah, it may have cost 20, but it made 30, and guess what? It's making money off of streaming because it's now on digital download. And then you have The Brutalist, which is still starting, it's barely starting to make money because it's barely been released. They kept it out of, like, they kept it out.
It got its Oscar qualifying release.
Exactly.
And then once they knew it was, you know, garnering that buzz, now it's rolling out.
Exactly. Like they put it in only like what, two theaters for a month, and people were pissed off because it's like, oh well, why can't I see this right now? It built the hype. Because eventually it's gonna turn around and be like, oh well, it's out now, so I can go and see it. Fuck this movie, but I'm still gonna go see it. It's the, like, I hate using this because fuck them. Like seriously, fuck both of them. I'm not gonna name them by names, but Miramax did in the 2000s. They except for A24 doesn't edit the, like everything I've heard is they're very filmmaker friendly. They don't fucking ruin your movie. Even Blumhouse, like Blumhouse ruins your movie because they'll edit it to, they'll let you do whatever you want. But if the test screenings are not good, you're not getting a theatrical release. So you're kind of fucked. Yeah. Right? But this is like, but then Wolfman has kind of thrown that up into the sky because Wolfman was a movie they never should have made it without Ryan Gosling. I mean, let's just be honest. Like as soon as Ryan Gosling left that movie and it was supposed to be a much bigger movie and they cut the budget, they cut the $60 million budget in half, like Lee Whannell was kind of fucked over in that. So I'm not going to say anything, but like there are ways of doing this. And you know what, if you look, like if you think about it, it's kind of going back to the, like where we were. And I know this sounds kind of shitty, but also like if you can't do it, don't try to do it, which is it's going back to the old model of filmmaking, like movies, which I'm not opposed to, because there's only a certain amount of there's only one studio that can really do it. And that's Marvel. Soon as Marvel, like it's like everybody wanted the Marvel piece. Right. And so they all threw all of this thing. But if you really look at the box office, it was Marvel consistently doing it. And everybody else following and kind of getting stuff. But if you really look at the budgets for some of these fucking movies and the return, it wasn't there. They were making $400 million. They were making $400 million on a $300 million movie. Like how do you, that's not, and you only get half of the box office. Like I think that's what people don't realize, is that you only get half of the box office. So you're losing money consistently. I don't know, man. Like, I don't mind it. Like this Christmas season, it's been interesting. Like, you know, you got something like one of the bigger surprises, at least for me, was Nosferatu, because it was such a movie that was kind of like, you would have seen it in the late 90s, early 2000s, and it would have made the money that it's making now. Right. Or something like Wicked. That's kind of like prime, like early aughts, right? Something that's not, it's IP driven, but it's a unique IP and they threw a lot of money at it. Or Sonic, even Sonic is like that kind of thing. And like, I don't know, man, like it's weird to see what they're putting out and what they're not putting out. But also I honestly think it's literally just a Lego set for these assholes. Like, oh, let me put this out. It's like, let me put this out, but not this out. Why? I don't know. I just don't like it. I don't like it. Like, because nothing matters to these assholes, because they're making, like, you know, like I read a figure, something like Bezos made $150 billion in the last 2 months.
Yeah.
When you're making $150 billion, what the fuck does a movie studio, you care about a movie studio?
Yeah. I mean, I get that, but I guess it's because it's the thing we love is yes, why it's really frustrating.
Yeah.
So.
It is. I mean, you know. But. Sorry to go on a tangent, guys. I mean, you guys probably don't want us to talk about Super Bowl, so. All right.
I want to talk about a show I did get a chance to watch this week. I made time for it because it is a Mike Judge property, and we do love us some Mike Judge. It's not just Mike Judge. It's Joseph Bennett. Judge, I think, is only on as like a producer. It's
he does
a lot of voices. Joseph Bennett and Steve Healy are the show creators. I'm gonna out myself as a bad nerd. I know that Scavenger's Reign was like a thing, like year before last, in 2020. Yeah. And a lot of people were like, oh my God, that, I think I watched part of the first episode and I was like, I don't think this is for me. Like, I don't remember what it was about it that didn't really vibe with me, but I don't know. It just didn't. So I didn't finish it, even though everybody raved and raved and raved about it. I don't know where you were on Scavenger's Reign.
So I liked it, but I didn't love it because it was like, does it make sense that it was a little bit too ponderous?
Okay. Like, that's a good word for what I remember from the show. When, again, maybe only half of the first episode, I was just like, I don't want to sit here and like watch an animated version of the night sky or space or whatever. Just a single shot of like stars for a minute and a half or whatever. Like I don't think this is for me. Yeah. Ponderous seems right.
it's very ponderous. And I mean, look, for some people, like, okay, there's a certain sector of nerd community that loves the weed, that loves like just smoking a bong load, taking a bong, ripping a bong hit and watching some crazy shit. And that was what that show was kind of designed for, because it's the ponderousness of it, because of the trippy, the very kind of 2001 kind of like weird visuals of it all. And
this show, if the people that did that for Scavenger's Reign follow them over to this show and think they're going to do the same thing, they're going to have a very bad high.
Oh, I can only imagine. I can only fucking imagine, just because of the trailer shows you everything. Like, it's like a trip gone bad, right? Like, it has those visuals.
The premise of the show is that there's this guy, his name's Marshall, and voiced by Dave King, and he was working in a jungle, and he was into pharmaceuticals and more like Eastern medicine. Anyway, he discovered this mushroom that's literally the cure for everything. It's the, like, it will bring you back to life. It is the cure for everything. It's the eternal, the fountain of youth. Well, maybe not youth, but like, it'll just cure everything. And the pharmaceutical companies know about this, know that he's discovered it, and he is enemy number one. So it is a paranoid, like, thriller, but also a comedy, and it is a wild mixture of genres, and it's one of the, a few years ago I told you about a comic book, it's still going, Department of Truth, that is all about conspiracies and how it will fuck with your head reading it, because then you just start seeing conspiracies everywhere, because like everything's a conspiracy. And so you have to have a firm sense of like what is reality. This is an animated show along the same lines. Like, if you do not watch this in the right headspace, like it is going to, like, if your view of the world is not already fucked, it is going to fuck it. Like, there's just it's so like, oh shit, like I don't need, like, why am I taking medicine? Like, don't take medicine. Like, so yeah, if you're stoned out of your mind and start watching this, I cannot imagine that it would be fun. Like, that it would just, you curl up in a ball and just cry. But it's extremely good. They dropped the first two episodes.
Yeah. That's what I'm going to say, is that they definitely dropped the first two. And like, I'm interested, but I just was not in the headspace this week to watch this fucking thing. Because I knew exactly what it was going to be. And I'm like, fuck this, dude.
I didn't know it was a scavenger's rain dude until I started watching the show. All I knew was Mike Judge and Greg Daniels.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh shit, like Mike Judge is like, I'm in, man. Like, I don't always love everything he does, but yeah, I'm always down to watch
it and give it a try. Yeah, I mean, he's like, he is one of the few like creatives and creators that I'm going to give a shot to. Like,
yeah, when I'm no matter what.
Exactly. I definitely like not to take away from this, but it's like, I definitely am going to try. I just didn't want, like, this week I was like, no, let's just wait. Like, I can wait a little bit. I don't need to fucking watch this right now and add on to the pylon. No, like, I can do it at my will, because regardless of what anybody says, like, this will have at least one season, if not two, because Judge has his, and it's Adult Swim, where, like, I feel like Adult Swim is definitely a place where they're going to give a show, especially for somebody like Mike Judge, who's producing this, its wings to at least have a season, if not two, like two seasons, if not three. So, like, you know,
they got an incredible voice cast. Like, it's up there. Like, it's not Invincible level yet, but we've only had two episodes, where like, when you're watching Invincible and you're like, is that someone? Like, every new character that pops up on Invincible is literally voiced by an actor that I'm like, I know who that is. It is kind of shitty, because there's a lot of great voice actors out there who that could be seen as taking work away from, but yes, it makes it feel more, this also sounds kind of shitty, but more Hollywood, you know, where it's like, this is not just an animated thing. It's like, these could be fill-ins. Like, you could cast this live action with these people, and it kind of works. Similar to what James Gunn is doing, I guess. But yeah, Dave King, who I like, I don't always love. I think he's a better writer than a actor. I mean, I he hasn't done a ton, but like, he was in that show Rutherford Falls. He was in like some Good Plays. Like, he's in that gang, you know. But he's also worked with Mike Schur forever. Like, he wrote on Parks and Rec. He was also a writer on English Teacher, that show that I mentioned, show. That's really good. So him as the lead, feels really weird. And like, there's this conceit of the character Marshall. He never, like, he's always wearing, no matter what he's doing, a Hawaiian shirt, no shirt underneath. Like, it's just an open Hawaiian shirt and this portly dude. Like, no matter what he's doing, like, that's just always how he's drawn. And it's weird, but it's funny. And it just, it never doesn't play, you know, it's not distracting. And it's like, why is this dude in the jungle or wherever he's at looking for mushrooms? And he's got like Bermuda shorts and an open Hawaiian shirt and his you know, flabby belly just hanging out. Like it's, and Emily Pendergrass plays this high school friend who he reconnects with, and she works for a pharmaceutical company. So, you know, that's going to be like a weird kind of thing. But the standouts, for me at least, Martha Kelly and Joseph Lee Anderson, who are like, you'd recognize their voices. You may not recognize their names. Joseph Lee Anderson was in Young Rock. I thought he was really, really good in that. He's been in a couple of other things, but he was Rocky Johnson in Young Rock, Rock's dad.
Yes.
They play these two agents that are kind of tasked with tracking him down, but they're not completely incompetent. They're just not very good at their job. And it makes for some really, really good comedy. Like there's a situation. They go to where, Marshall lives, investigate his place. He's not there. They leave for some reason, but unbeknownst to them, like, oh no, he is there. He escapes. That's what it is. Without them seeing him, and they leave. And when they come back, unbeknownst to them, Marshall has called for basically just a burn of his, like, he calls in somebody to like get his files and just set his place on fire, basically, to like, you know, just get rid of all his stuff so nobody can get
it. So nobody can get there.
Yeah. And so it's just, they come back and like the whole house is on fire and they're like, it's just this whole comedic moment of like, what the fuck happened? Like, we were just here. I mean, I'm doing it a disservice trying to describe it, but they're kind of monotonous banter because it is not like the serious, like Secret Service kind of like real direct. It is them talking about the most banal stuff possible while they do this. Like it is like you sitting in a cubicle at work talking about like just the day-to-day bullshit. Be like, I've got an ingrown toenail, man. Like, can you believe that shit? Like, it hurts so while they're trying to find this dude and kill him. It's not even the level of like Pulp Fiction where they're kind of being like, it's a little sexier. This is so unsexy. And it's great. Especially Martha Kelly, who she does a lot of voice work too, but like, I'm trying to think of what maybe her biggest thing is. I don't know. Like, she's the tour guide in Spider-Man Homecoming, you know?
Oh,
like,
okay. That
flat voice kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, when you hear her, you'll be like, oh, yeah, her. Because she's been in, like, everything. But she's just not a really, really big star. But anyway, mm-hmm. it's a like two episodes. I think it's an absolutely fantastic show. Must watch, but must watch in the right headspace, because like, especially in the, it sucks because the current climate may not be, it's the right time for the show, but we're all so on edge about everything already. It's just like, oh great, here's something, here's literal entertainment that is also going to give me anxiety.
Yeah, which, to which it's like, like, you gotta, like, you know, you're gonna, like, for me, I'm gonna tell people, like, you know, like, you gotta moderate however you decide is your level of entry and interest in things, you know, and it's partially probably the reason why we, like, you know, sometimes we get to things and sometimes we don't, and that's okay. Like, it's okay to be, like, you don't, like, you know, I feel like the era of must-watch movies and must-watch TV is fucking gone out to the garbage can and got lit on fire, because fuck that. Because your mental health is a little bit more important so that you can get through day to day, right? Like, yeah. I still know people that, like, they complain about, like, here's my favorite thing is that some people will fucking sit there and complain about, like, how stressed out they are and how fucking they can't fall asleep. Well, you know what? Maybe you should not watch murder documentaries and conspiracy things and go down social media doom scroll. But if you tell them that, they act like you're fucking nuts. Like, I'm the problem. Like, I'm the problem. No, I'm not the problem. I'm not watching murder docs and documentaries about doxing and about, like, you know, the state of the world. Like, you, like, come on. Like, act like, be like, I always tell people the first act of self-care is treating yourself right. If you're abusing yourself, like, murder docs maybe not be the true crime and socio-political, like, documentaries may not be the best thing for you right now, especially if you're taking copious amounts of a drug that makes you paranoid already. Like, you know, come on. Like, let's just put down the weed vape pen. Take down the murder docs and all of the other documentaries that you're watching, and exercise some self-care. Maybe you won't be so fucking lit all the time about, like, you know, the world is ending. Yeah, maybe the world is ending. Maybe it is. Maybe in 15 years we'll get there. But, you know, it doesn't help when you're just kind of, like, adding fuel to the fire, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, why I
It's definitely like a must watch, but must watch in the right headspace. So
exactly, you know, which for most people means like at 11 o'clock at night, right before they're supposed to go to bed. So you know what, guys,
no, don't do that.
This is
maybe a watch when you get up and then you have like all day to talk yourself out of, like, it's not real. That's not really what's going on. Like, they're not all trying to kill you. So, because, I mean, the show does kind of, like, do that, which is a pretty common thing. You hear that and, like, the doctors and, like, they want you to be sick. Like, they're not actually trying to cure you. They're trying to just make sure you get sick again. And like that kind of shit, like it holds that as a truth. And mm-hmm. So if you're already on that line, like this show is going to send you way over. So, but even if I'm not on that line, not yeah. saying that there aren't companies out there that don't think that way, but I'm just not on the like, oh, you go to the hospital and you're like, no, well, we don't really.
Yeah, need to I mean, get because better. You've had, yeah. The whole thing is that you've had an experience where
yes. you're
not better. like that always informs on this kind of shit, right? Like you're like anti-Luigi, right? Like you actually went to, like, when you went into the hospital, you had people that actually cared about you. Like you had the right kind of experience with doctors. And like this, what the saddest part is that there's a lot of people that haven't had that.
Yeah, it like, sucks. Like, it breaks my heart here when I hear people's stories about, like, and I did have, like, you know, run-ins with people who are like they're shitty and they don't need to be in the medical field. But, you know, for the most part, you know, I didn't have that experience. So when you talk to people that have only had that experience, like, it's really, really heartbreaking. And
it really is.
You know, but then also, like, if you, much like teaching, if you know people that work in the medical field and you hear their stories about the way they get, it's like this endless cycle. Like, it wears you down so much that eventually, like, a lot of people do just lose their hope or desire to, like, be helpful. You're just like,
exactly,
whatever, it's just a job. Like, they're gonna be shitty to me, so I'll be shitty to them. And like, it's just in cycle. But anyway, all that to say, like, this show is excellent, but yes, please watch with caution.
Exercise some mental health for yourself, guys. Don't stab yourself, because it seems like everybody's just stabbing themselves nowadays.
Yeah. If they,
you know,
dude, if they had dropped all, I think it's going to be 13 episodes, all 13 episodes, and I had binge watched this in a weekend, by Monday, I would not be okay. Like, I'm already almost not okay most of the time, but like, by Monday, I would just be like, I hate the world. Like, I really, truly hate the world. Because unless something happens in the show that kind of like gives it a more hopeful vibe, which I shouldn't say, it does have like Marshall as a character is a very paranoid, but seemingly right in case of the show, but good person. Like, he rescued, it's either a turtle or a tortoise when he was almost killed trying to get this mushroom. And for the two episodes, at least so far, like, he takes that thing everywhere with him. And I mean, it's like his dog. It's like me and Ripley, where it, like, he has this like bond with this animal, and it's really sweet. And, you know, I won't spoil it, but there's a really brutal moment where you think it's like, oh, this dude is a piece of shit. And then he kind of reverses course. Like, it goes somewhere you didn't think it was going to go. And you're like, oh, shit. Like, wow, that's crazy. But yeah, he's trying to be a hopeful person. So... anyway, let's talk about something a little bit happier. You want to start with the Jurassic Park trailer?
World.
I really wish they had went back to Jurassic Park.
That's my thing, is that, but also, like, I understand, like, this is a new series. Like, this era is different than how much do we want to bet that this is definitely Spielberg saying, no. That's my trilogy. You don't touch that. I don't want whatever happens with these. And it's kind of true. Like, I definitely see this as Jurassic World and the Jurassic Parks as a very different trilogy. Like,
yeah, I guess they couldn't go with like Jurassic Universe or Jurassic, I don't know, like something instead of just Jurassic World Rebirth.
Like Jurassic Island sounds too small.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I understand where they're going, like, you know, especially at, like, it's a soft reboot, which, I mean, to be perfectly honest, yeah, it is. It's not like the hard reboot that Jurassic World was as compared to Jurassic Park and like the Jurassic Park trilogy, right? But I will say this much. I think that the smartest thing that they did was get Gareth Edwards to make this movie, because damn, the scale is great in this. Like,
he is a guy that's really good. I mean, from the jump, like, he understood the way to scale things like this.
Exactly.
Like, I didn't see The Creator. I know you did, though.
I liked it a lot. Like, I really, for the movie, like, A movie that cost literally $70 million, it looks like a $250 million movie. Like, he was like, and then you watch the behind the scenes documentary and go, Jesus, like, this movie was like, I can understand why now, like, how he got to do it the exact way that he needed to do it. Like, and if that, like, if like, you know, doing the creator got him the job for Jurassic World along with Godzilla, I'm okay with it, because man, does this like look like.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a pretty good track record. I mean, Monsters was a small movie, but a lot of people talked about it. It was great. Yep. That got him Godzilla, which I do think Godzilla is a good movie. I do not love that they sold us a movie that Godzilla wasn't in, but I don't know that that's necessarily on him. But I think he was trying to do Jaws, and like, I guess if you went into Jaws thinking the shark was in every shot of the movie, and it's like an hour and a half of people talking about whether or not they should go get the shark, you might be a little frustrated. But like, I could probably revisit Godzilla now and appreciate it a lot more. Not that I did like it at the time, but Rogue One, we can argue whether that's a Gareth Edwards movie. Mm-hmm. But he did have a lot. Like, he is still listed as the director. So, and then the creator. And now we have Jurassic World Rebirth. And, like, the trailer, I don't know. It really did it for me, man. Like,
it really did.
And I'm trying to be cautious because I don't know that there's been a Jurassic franchise trailer that didn't get me hyped for the next movie. But, like, first of all, they're revisiting elements from, and it seems like, the location of Jurassic Park 3.
Yes. It's definitely, well, okay, so like, the big thing about this, I don't know if you know, but Spielberg personally asked Kep to come back and write the script. Now, this is both a good thing and a bad thing, because Kep is the one who basically wrote all three of the first Jurassic Park, the Jurassic Park trilogy, right? Like, even though his name is not, I don't think his name is listed on the third one, but he definitely did major rewrites when Joe Johnston came back, or when Joe Johnston came on to direct that. And so I feel like this is Spielberg guiding the ship to a point to where it's like, okay, let's go back to certain things that we know can be, like, we can make something that's a little bit more in line, because we got way off with the Jurassic World stuff. Like, that last one, like, I don't even know, man. Like that one was fucking wild. Like, it was just basically, let's go ahead and rehash everything, and, like, let's make this, like, garbage dump of a movie and set it on fire. I don't know. Anyways, I definitely like the fact that everything seems to, it's not like, they're going back to stuff, but it's not done in that traditional, like, oh, here we go. Nudge, nudge, nudge. Like, all, like, it feels like they're setting it in, at the second sight, but it's just the setting of it, right? It's not like they're adding its own flavor and just making it a setting so that it allows it to have connections with the third film. Like, at least from the trailer, right?
Yeah, and he has said specifically that, Kep, that is, that he went back to the book, the original Jurassic Park book, to pull things from the book that they didn't include in the original film and add them to this story, which is mostly, you know, original, but he is taking parts from the original Jurassic Park book and adapting them. I think he said specifically the scariest thing in the book, which I've never read the book, so that he adapted it because they couldn't include it in the first movie. that he's put it in this. So that's pretty exciting. Kep as a screenwriter is, I mean, I don't even think I can say for me he's hit or miss. I think in general he's just hit or miss. I don't know that it's always him that's the miss. It could be his screenplay was fine, and then, like, you know, they bring in people to rewrite parts of it, and it's not, you know, winds up not being great. I mean, his last movie is that Soderbergh movie that just came out, right? I haven't seen that.
That, and also, he did two Soderbergh movies. Like, he did that one, and then the spy one he also wrote. But from everybody's, from everything I've heard, Presence, it was an old Kep screenplay that Soderbergh heavily rewrote. And then when Kep saw the film, he loved it. But then also he decided to, like, Soderbergh asked him again to collaborate on the spy film that he's doing in a couple of months. It's the one with Michael Fassbender and Cate Blanchett. That's another one. And Kep was like,
Black Bag? Is that it?
Yeah, Black Bag. He was like, oh no, I totally want to collaborate with you. And that one is going to be like a true collaboration. So, like, those two are the last things that he's done.
Well, and Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. That movie does have problems.
Yes.
It is good, though, but I don't think the script is the problem. So, like, he's on a bit of a hot streak, I guess we could say. Because, like, before that, I think it's, like, The Mummy and like, Inferno, and those are not great.
I mean, like, he did the pandemic Soderbergh movie, Kimmy, which is actually a really effective, like...
Oh, okay, I didn't see that.
The movie that he's known for is Stir of Echoes. And he did a little reunion, another pandemic movie, You Should Have Left. That was the one with Kevin Bacon in it.
Oh yeah.
And Amanda Seyfried.
He directed that, right?
Yes. Yes. He directed and wrote that. It was like another haunted house movie and stuff. Again, like, pandemic movie, but effective. Like, when he's writing, directing, I feel like, because it's a little bit smaller scale, he's a very effective writer. I feel like when it gets to the big shit, that's where it's like,
So, like, his directing, I think, is also hit or miss, but, like, Stir of Echoes, I think, is really good. Secret Window, I think, is pretty good, like, a pretty good adaptation of, like, that material. Ghost Town, I didn't see. Premium Rush, I remember liking. And, I'm an outlier here. I understand that it's goofy and stupid, but, like, I kind of had fun with Mordecai.
Man, like, I saw that, like, 3 years after it came out, and I was like, okay, it's literally Pink Panther. Like, that's literally what it is. It's Pink Panther, but not, like, it's kind of like it, like it, like, if it had came out in the 70s, it would have starred Peter Sellers, and it would have been a big hit. It was like, oh, okay. Like, it's not a bad movie. It's just, it's a mid. Right? Like, we were just talking about mid-movies. And, I mean, it's not bad.
Yeah, and it's trying to be like this, like you said, like a Pink Panther, like Austin Powers-ish kind of, like, the things, like, you used to see people like Steve Martin do. And it's just Johnny Depp trying to, like, do a little something different. And, like, I'm with you. Like, I saw it a few years after the fact, and I was like, oh, that was, like, it had its funny moments, and it was, you know, kind of cute. So, like, I get why it didn't make any money at the box office, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's just, like, at the time, people had their fill of Johnny Depp. But anyway, all that to say, like, David Kep, like, a guy we're in for the most part. We're definitely in for Gareth Edwards. So, like, this collaboration, and then you get the cast that they have. The cast.
Yeah.
Scarlett Johansson not always in the best things. Maybe that has more to do with her agent and less to do with her ability. But mm-hmm. I mean, I generally am down for watching her in anything, but like her as an action hero, I'm usually always in for.
Well, also, like, okay, so like for me, seeing her not be Black Widow and like actually like have a sense of adventure and fun, like that was kind of like a different take on her. So yeah. I'm like, okay, let's do this.
It feels weird to just be like, oh, she's doing Chris Pratt, because like that just feels like an immediate comp. But it's her getting to do the things that somebody like Chris Pratt gets to do. She gets to kick ass and also crack wise. Yeah. Like, yeah, give me that.
And also give me Mahershala Ali in Magnum P.I. getup with a beret on. Like, dude, you got me.
You're so, like, chomping a cigar and shit.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, man.
Like, why haven't we gotten this Mahershala? Like, all it does is make me feel like Marvel fumbled big time.
I mean, like, they keep doing it. Like, you have this man standing there being like, let's do Blade. And you can't get a script? Like, come on, man.
Seriously, it is so easy. And, like, you know, it's just like, dude is like, you watch him in the 20 seconds he's in this fucking thing, and you're like, yeah, I'm sold. Like this is something that should have happened 15 years ago with Mahershala Ali, but it didn't. And okay, fine, but we're here now. The funniest one, the most unexpected one, is Jonathan Bailey playing essentially
the damsel in distress.
Well, yeah, not that, but like, think about it. He spent all his PR time with Jeff Goldblum, and now I know why. It's because it's all the psychological because Universal produced both this and Wicked, and he spent all his time with, like, it made us like automatically, oh, he's Jeff Goldblum in this. But the damsel in distress Jeff Goldblum, right? Because he's got the glasses, he's got the kind of nebbish thing going on. He's the comic relief, and it's just kind of like, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, let's do this. It's kind of like the best most unexpected version of him, and I like it. I'm here for it. Yeah. I'm like, you know, like, you have these three leads, and then you've got like my favorite part is they're not even hiding the fact that Rupert Friend is a fucking bad guy. We already know he's a bad guy.
It's Ed Skrein is in this too. Which,
yeah, we haven't even seen him yet.
Yeah, we haven't. Like, we don't even know who he's playing, but I imagine it's a bad guy. Like,
yeah,
that dude has a hard time getting cast as anything but a bad guy, unfortunately. But he's so good at it. So,
absolutely.
It looks so much fun, and I know it's only like a 90 second trailer, but I don't know, the story that we know is that they're on an expedition to like get DNA from the dinosaurs, like that's the story that is out there. I'm sure there's more to it than that, and there'll probably be some like bigger conspiracy thing. You know, most of the Jurassic Park world stuff past the first movies always falls into like some vast conspiracy. So, like, I mean, even Lost World, like, it wound up being like, oh no, we're here to trap a dinosaur and take it back. So, there's always that little twist. It isn't immediately bogged down by the shit that the last Jurassic World was, which I didn't hate, but like in a weird, like, oh, you saw me a Jurassic Park movie without dinosaurs, like, much like, you know, kind of how I felt about Godzilla, you know, But I mean, we see dinosaurs in the damn trailer. You know, I can't imagine that it's going to be one of those kind of things. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, we're getting, I heard, I was reading up on the production, and they actually filmed in Thailand, on location in Thailand, and it gives it a different flavor, which I love. Like, and it feels real, it feels tactile, it feels like they are trying their best to, go back to the adventure and the danger of the first two films. And regardless of what you think of Lost Worlds, I have a lot of affection for that movie just because of how mean it is. Like, it's very much of, the Temple of Doom style sequels where it's very mean. It's also, I love the way it's shot. But this movie...
I appreciate it more now than I did originally. I'm with you there. I going back to the Jurassic Park 3 of it all, I think that is the most underrated of any of them. I will give you... Lost Kingdom is two different movies for me. There's the first half of the movie, which I think is really, really good, or more than a half, two thirds of the movie. And then there's the last 30 minutes. And I don't think that's very good at all. I think it becomes a almost King Kong Godzilla-esque kind of thing. And it's we've seen this, and especially at the time it was I think they had just made a Godzilla movie or were making another Godzilla, that Matthew Broderick movie. And I was I didn't really need this. So I want the island stuff, them confined, putting them in, which is where Jurassic World kind of falls apart too. So
yeah, absolutely.
It's so much more, I don't know, immediate when it's oh, we're on this island. How are we going to get out?
No, you're absolutely right. I'm definitely sold on this.
Yeah. I don't want to prognosticate about box office stuff, but I don't know. To me, it feels this could be, the summer where we have those multiple, billion-dollar franchise films, which hasn't happened in a while.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. Okay, so I'm going to make a statement here. I think people are going to go back to the movies because, the dumpster fire that is, what we're seeing out there right now, and we're going to need entertainment. I need entertainment, and I'm somebody who's not actually doom scrolling and doing shit like that, a lot. And I still need entertainment. Still desperately need entertainment in a big way. And I feel like everybody is going to feel the same way. And with movies like this, and then the next movie we're going to be talking about, and also Superman, we're kind of set for that kind of let's go ahead and go into a darkened theater and escape for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Or 2.5 hours, which, yeah. I mean, and if you make a good one, if this is a good one, if this is even the comp of Jurassic Park 3, which is the word, it's the second of the, if we're talking the original trilogy, of course, there's the original, which is a classic, a Stone Cold classic, and then you have these two other sequels. I feel like the third one is, the better of the two, right? If you even get close to the third one, you get to that, which I always love that it's a 90-minute movie. I love that. Yeah. I always forget about that it's a 90, literally Jurassic Park 3 is a 90-minute movie. As long as you get to that, be happy. You'll satisfy me. I'm not asking for Jurassic Park because that's a classic, but if you can get me close to it, if you can get me Jurassic Park 3, I'm there. And I'll be there for probably a couple of times.
Yeah. I mean, if this is as great as it looks like it can be, it's like this double-edged thing where it's like, okay, we'll lock these people in for two more. But also, like, I would hate to see Gareth Edwards. Like, this is a dude that has a lot of potential.
Yes. Well, especially if you see Creator, like, you'll be like, okay, this is him trying to get, like, you know, trying to, like play in a nice, like, a nice sandbox, but also he's got a purpose for this. Like, you know, he's, like, trying to get back to where he can get a lot of money to do the things that he wants to do.
If he can do the Nolan thing.
Yes.
Then,
where
he goes away for
a couple of years.
Yeah, where it's not like we got to churn these out super quick, and it's like, okay, I'm going to do Batman Begins, and that's going to afford me, like, an in with a studio and enough money to be like, hey, I made this movie for you. Can I go make, was it Insomnia after Batman Begins?
Or was that before? No, it was The Prestige after Batman Begins. And that's then, right.
Yeah.
And then between Dark Knight, like Dark Knight and Dark Knight Returns, or was it Dark Knight Lives? I can't remember the third one. He did Inception, to which, like, after you've done Inception, like, I don't know why you go back to the third one. I guess because you knew that if they were going to move along with it anyways and just complete the trilogy.
Yeah, but I wish they did. If anybody was going to make that third one, I wish it wasn't Nolan, because I don't like the third one, and I wish his name wasn't on it, because I really want to mostly like Christopher Nolan, even though I'm contentious about some of his stuff. So also, not to get off on another tangent, did you see the interviews with what's his name from Memento talking about the reason
he's
not been in more Christopher Nolan, why he, like, because Nolan just reworks with the same people a lot.
Yes.
And it was because the head of Warner Brothers was like, no, he's not a movie star. You can't use him in your movies.
Well, like, and you heard that he was initially supposed to be up for, like, this is heartbreaking to me, is the fact that we there's an alternate universe where Guy Pearce is Batman. Because that's fucking wild to me.
Yeah.
Because they're like him and Bale are, like, literally plus or minus 5 years. Like, I think that and, like,
definitely similar skill, similar range, it sucks because it's not like a Hugh Jackman, I can't remember the guy's name from Mission Impossible 2 that was gonna be Wolverine.
Oh, yeah. Doug Ray Scott.
Doug Ray Scott, but, like, he's not.
Oh no, he's not
super talented. Like, he's a decent enough actor, but Hugh Jackman is a star. Like, he can do everything. Like, Guy Pearce is not Doug Ray Scott. Like, this is a dude who's enormously talented, and the fact that we may have lost out on a career from Guy, not that he hasn't worked, he does, but, like,
absolutely,
that could have shot him into Bale levels of superstardom, and we could have been looking at, you know, Guy Pearce with multiple Oscar noms, and, you know, like, yeah, maybe he would have done the Terminator thing too, but, you know, it's still very frustrating where it's like, God, man, like, what a different, and it doesn't sound like he, like, laments it. It's just like, well, it is what it is. Yeah. That was upsetting to read. And I was like, who the fuck doesn't think Guy Pearce is a phenomenal? How do you watch Memento and not go, oh, this guy's fantastic?
Well, okay, so, like, here's the thing, is I know what studio chief he's talking about, and this motherfucker is the same guy who was under his clock, he was in LA Confidential for this guy. So him saying that, like, 3 years later, that Memento, like, him and Memento wasn't a good actor, is literally like, what are you fucking talking about? It had to be a personal grudge thing, to which, like, you know, I mean, Guy Pearce, like you said, Guy Pearce went on to a career. Like, he's definitely had a good career. He's gotten now an Oscar nomination for The Brutalist, and it looks like he's probably going to win that Best Supporting Actor for this very kind of, like, critique of the American billionaire or millionaire at the time, you know, and good for him. Like, he deserves it. He's earned it. But like you said, the career that could have been, yeah, dude, like, that's some fucking shit. That's some bullshit. But again, how many people have suffered that in Hollywood? Because they wouldn't sleep with somebody because somebody didn't like their look, or they had a bad fucking day and they ruined somebody's life. Like, that's, like, again, that's some shit. Like, that's some bullshit. But again, this is where we live. This is the timeline, right?
Yeah.
So at least he's had the career that he has had.
My favorite, I haven't seen The Brutalist, and it's 3.5 hours. I don't know if I'll ever see The Brutalist, but my favorite thing about Guy Pearce is, like, so, especially people in America probably don't know, there's this soap opera on in Australia called Neighbours that's been running since 1986. And I know Guy Pearce isn't, again, he's not Christian Bale, but, like, this is a pretty well-known actor. Like, you know, he's done a lot of shit. I mean, he's out there. But,
yeah,
this motherfucker has been in, like, 900 episodes of this Australian soap opera going back to the 80s. Like, it is wild to me that, you know, this is a guy who's been in huge, like, big projects.
Yes.
But he's done, like, 900 episodes of this 30-minute Australian soap opera.
But everybody has been on Neighbours. Like, that's the weirdest part, is that, like...
But 900 episodes?
I know. But, I mean, also, you think about it, it comes on every day, right? Yeah. So, like, no,
I mean, it's like looking at the episode count, right, for, like, The Young and the Restless, or, you know, it's just like, they made 3,000 episodes. Like, yeah, man, it was on 5 days a week, like, exactly. 9 months a year. So.
But, yeah, 900 episodes. Fucking wild.
No. Did you, like, we may have talked about it at some point. He had this, low budget, like, pseudo sci-fi movie from years and years ago called The Rover. Did you ever watch that?
I fucking love The Rover.
Yeah, it was really good, man.
Dude, okay, so I don't know if you've seen it recently, but just buyer beware, the ending killed me at the end.
Robert Pattinson, right? So yes. I think that was the thing that put me off watching it for a while. I was like, I'm not watching Pattinson movie.
But Pattinson is so fucking good in that movie. But the ending, when you find out what the rover was,
yeah,
oh, man, that fucking killed me. Like, I don't know now. Now with you being who you are now.
Oh yeah, I'd have a different view on that movie. It hit a lot harder.
But that movie.
The Hurt Locker, man, like, you know, he was really good in that movie.
Yeah. I mean, shit. I mean, he's great in Iron Man 3.
Like, that's like, was a world where he's Batman and Christian Bale is the guy in Iron Man 3.
Yes. Well, have you seen his, like, Have you seen his Escape from New York in Space? Lockout?
Yeah.
I fucking love that movie. Like, a movie so copied Escape from New York that it got sued by John Carpenter, and they actually won because it's such a fucking, it's such a fucking copy. Basically, it's just a, like, you know, Escape from New York in space. Like, so good. Like, but it's so fucking fun because he's there and he's just like, he's doing the Kurt Russell thing. He's like, ah, I'll play Kurt Russell for a bit. Yeah. Like, that's how good Guy Pearce is that he's just like, you know what? You want me to play this action hero? I can do that. Like, did you know that, like, here's a little bit that I found out because he had mentioned it. And I was like, what? Did you know that he was a Mr. Olympia Junior in Australia when he was 16? Crazy, right?
No.
Like, he was a bodybuilder. He was like, yeah, I just decided to go for it for a spell. Like, you know, because he's Australian and shit. And he was like, he actually competed in Mr. Olympia Junior in his teenage years and like was like very competitive, like amazing, just amazing.
That's crazy.
Like, yes, very much like very fucking crazy. Like, I kind of like, you know, he's like that guy that you really like, he's like an actor that you just kind of really love to love because he's just, his career is so kind of all over the place, but in the best way possible, you know, it's like whatever, like, he decides to, like, you know, it's almost like he's like, I'm going to do this because it's in front of me and it's interesting. You know, that's how we get, you know, something like I said, like something like The Brutalist, where it's just like, huh, I'm going to do this movie. You know, I mean, he's in the next Cronenberg film that hasn't been released yet. I'm still dying for this thing to come out. The Shrouds. He's in that. You know, so, you know, I don't know, man. Like, I really kind of like, it sucks because you, like, if you're a Guy Pearce fan, you instantly think about the era that he could have played Batman.
Dude, I don't think I will ever forgive, which I know he's in a good portion of Prometheus, but like, I have my problems with that movie, but I try to give it a pass. But like, of all the things that, like, why do you get Guy Pearce and then make him, like, spend, I don't know, a brief or good chunk of the movie, really, and like this old man makeup and, like, yeah, just come on,
it's
man.
It's Ridley's thing. It's Ridley's thing. Do you remember, like, all the world where fucking Kevin fucking Spacey's in old man makeup? But then the best part is, he gets canceled. He has to redo all of his scenes. And what did he do? Get Christopher Plummer.
Yeah, he cast an old man to begin with.
Yes. Fucking Ridley with his old man makeup shit. Like, I just don't get it.
I don't get it. So, all right. So, let's talk about the big one. We got our first Fantastic Four trailer. I know it's Fantastic Four First Steps. I don't know why they're still insisting on using that, because no one's going to call it that. We're all just going to call it Fantastic Four. But whatever. Okay. Fantastic Four, First Steps, 90 seconds. And I'm sold. Like, all worries out the window. That lose you?
Yes, you did. Just for a second. I'm sorry about that. Like, okay. I don't know what happened. I know what happened. My headset shifted over to another computer. I have two computers that I'm running concurrently.
Oh, nice.
yeah, it's a fucking stupid ass fucking thing. But anyways, dude, like I think I told you in a text, I was like, I don't need to see anything else. I'm done. I literally have seen everything that I need to see. Like, I don't need to see anything else because it looks like, okay. So, like, first off, like, let's just do the first level of it, which is that, like, there's somewhere on Earth, like, Peyton Reed should be paid a lot of money because this is supposedly what hit. I know, Rip. This was his
idea. She agrees.
This was his idea. That's what he actually had said, that he wanted to make a period piece. And they got so close, like, so much so that, like, I heard the rumor was that we would have gotten a Ewan McGregor Mr. Fantastic, to which, oh man, could you imagine a Mr. Yeah. Fantastic played by Obi-Wan Kenobi? Let's just not go there. But it's literally the like this 90 seconds is exactly what you want from a Fantastic Four movie. Like this is it. Like anybody that says that it looked like, I've heard this major complaint is that, well, it looks a little like TV. Fuck you. You know what? Fuck you and shut the fuck up.
The visual style is what probably sells it for me more than anything. Like
exactly
pseudo 50s retro sci-fi, like, you know, I don't know. It sells it. And you know, this sounds maybe, I don't know. I think of all the characters, the one visually you have to get most right is the Thing. And while I can appreciate every live action performance of Ben Grimm that we've had, this is the first one that when it showed him, I was like, oh no, they nailed that. That's Kirby. That looks like he stepped off of the comic book page. Like there's this like fluidity in his movement, even though he's a giant rock monster, that hasn't been there for any other performance. And you know, for good reason, because it's always just been a guy in a rubber suit, and they don't have didn't have like the visual enhancements that we do now. But like, there's like this expressivity in his like eyebrows, and I don't know, it just so works. And it's a little cheeky to have like, oh, we have the guy from the biggest show about cooking on going right now, and the first shot we see of him, like the first shot is him in the kitchen, you know, like meal prep, you know, making dinner or whatever, and you know, like, oh yeah, we got the guy from The Bear, and our first shot of him in this like CGI'd out outfit, whatever, it looks like a mix of like mocap and maybe some prosthetic stuff, I don't know. But yeah, having him in the kitchen, I'm like, okay, I see what you're doing.
It's just great. It's like a little knowing nod, right? Like something that somebody like in 20 years is not going to know, but like in this one, it's just definitely like, oh Jesus, like that's fucking hilarious and great. It sells the tone. Like, and that's all I care about, is it sells the tone. Like it gives you all of the problems. Like, it was almost like the trailer was a checklist. Like Kevin Feige knew what the problems were, what fandoms was going to have a problem with. So he just created a checklist and said, let's make a tonal trailer that checks off all of these things. And we're not going to give them everything, but that we're going to give them just enough so that they understand the tone. And we'll give them another trailer with the more of the story of it later on. But let's give them a checkbox thing where they can go ahead and look at everything that we're doing. And, you know, they'll see that we're like, this is what our thing is, like it or not. And you're not going to be able to really say anything. And it works. Like, it works as a kind of like, it does what it's supposed to do, which is a teaser. It gives you a taste. And if you choose to, you can kind of move forward and look at all the other things, or you can just decide to like just keep this teaser and go, okay, this is done. I'm good. I don't need anything more. Man, it looks so like, it's just so kind of, this is the thing that I've been waiting. Like,
I mean, this in the Superman trailer, like,
yep,
they, either one of them, I don't need to see more, but the thing about it is I think I'm going to watch more, even though I don't need to see more, I'm so curious about what else they're going to do. So
yeah,
in this trailer, we see Ben Grimm, we see the thing. We see Johnny Storm doing the Johnny Storm thing, lighting up as the Human Torch. That also looks incredible. I like that we're getting the trails, like very comic booky, like just trails of fire as he flies.
Yes.
I really, really like that. Sue Storm's powers on show, on display for just a little bit. Looks cool. Like, I like the light, bendy, reflective thing that they're doing with the invisibility, you know?
Oh,
like
definitely.
This prismatic thing. I think that's
where
cool.
Where you can see the JJ flares.
Yeah, yeah.
It's definitely got a beauty to it. Man, Vanessa Kirby, like, perfect casting. Like, I get why they got Pedro now. Like Pedro in a suit and a mustache is like the best version of a 1960s kind of dude in a mustache, because you don't want to go, like, I finally get it, because you don't want to go Don Draper. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Don Draper is not what you want. And if you get anybody else, it's going to be a play on Don Draper. But with Pedro, it's this.
So that's the one power we don't see.
We don't see. And I feel like.
Do you think it's. Well, A, because they really, really need to make sure visually it looks good. But also, it's a power that can play.
Stupid.
And probably should play really stupid and silly.
Yes. I think that that's what it is. And I feel like they're trying to show us the tone of this, which is sort of serious, but not. And like when we see Pedro, like he comes in and he's this, like, he's kind of like a salesman. Like,
yeah,
he's
you giving this. Want to do that, like, Fred McMurray, 50s dad, like,
yes,
very, like, responsible adult kind of thing, and showing his powers might undercut what you're trying to say about his character.
Yes.
And so it's just not in there at all. Now, I'm sure at some point we'll see it in a trailer, because they're going to want to be able to, like, just show that they can do it a little bit. But
I think, like, so go with me on this. I feel like the power is not going to, it's going to be what we've seen, not the Kirby version of it, but the version that a lot of writers, a lot of the smartest writers and artists have currently done, which is they're using it not as the, okay, let's go ahead and do like the Plastic Man thing, where we're just going to wrap him around things. They're, like, the molecular structure of things and the way that he's able to, like, change and do certain things with it. I feel like that's the version we're going to get.
Yeah.
And
very, like, sorry, I cut you off. But
no.
What you're saying is, hey, we have to, even though her name is Elastigirl, we have to take our cues not necessarily from, like, old Fantastic Four cartoons or like the kind of goofiness of it. We have to do what they did in The Incredibles, which is play this power for like what it can be. Yes, it can look goofy and silly, but that there's lots of stuff in those Incredibles movies where you're seeing Elastigirl use her powers in a way that isn't just like Plastic Manny, like you said, like old Super Friends cartoons. So, I'm with you there. I also do think it part of it is probably like special effects wise, it's not fully there. I mean, we only get that two shots really of Ben Grimm, and one of them is him in a trench coat walking around. So I think that also tells you that, like, hey, yeah, we only have, like a few really great finish shots of this right now.
Yeah, because it's literally it's still 5 months away, like, and not even 5 months, almost 6 months away. Though, like, okay, so the big thing that we get, the kind of announcement, is Galactus. Like,
yep.
Okay, so like, I love how like Kevin continues to go throughout his career and remembers people that have slighted him, because he was one of the executives that said we should absolutely have Galactus in Rise of the Silver Surfer, and everybody telling him no, it's gonna look stupid, comic accurate versions of this character doesn't work, let's just do a giant CGI blob. This motherfucker puts this out right away and just goes, yeah, Galactus right here, it works. Shut the fuck up, you guys were wrong, you guys continue to be wrong, and I'm gonna continue to show you that you're wrong. Like, I don't know, man, like that's all I need to see. I just needed to see those two things.
Yeah, I've seen some chatter about the Galactus stuff online. I don't know if you've seen it, people talking about his scale, which I mean, first of all, in the comics he can change size.
Yes.
So that's not really a thing. Also, I mean, we have barely two shots of Galactus. One is a shadow. One is, and I saw somebody was like, well, he's barely bigger than the Statue of Liberty. I was like, are you kidding me? He's like five times the Statue of Liberty in that shot. What are you talking about? Like, just nerds want to be pissed off at anything. I'm so stoked for Galactus and how they're going to do that. John Malkovich, we get a brief shot of. We don't 100% know who he's playing. We have our suspicions. I mean, he could, like, the shot we get of him, he looks like he's coming out of a cave. So he could just be the Mole Man.
He could, but when you get, like, let's be honest, when you get Walter Hauser in your movie, you kind of have to make him Mole Man. Like, I know it sounds, like, very crass and very obvious, but I almost want it to be that's just a complete misdirect, and Hauser is him. But again, it does kind of look like he's Mole Man. He really, really does.
But, I mean, maybe he's not. Like, maybe he's... I think my guess originally was Puppet Master.
That's what you had said.
But that doesn't seem right. Like, just based on his look and how we see him in the trailer, like, I'm going to back off that. It does seem like they're stuffing a lot of characters in this movie. But it also makes me think some of them are not going to be, like, fully, like, a huge, huge part of the movie. I'm going to go out on a limb and say the Galactus stuff is only the end of the movie.
Yes. I feel like, okay, so, like, if it's Mole Man is, like, the James Bond opening. Like, do you know what I mean? Like how I feel like this movie is going to be framed is we're going to get like an opening that's like super exciting with the Mole Man and the Fantastic Four, like working together to solve the Mole Man problem, whatever it is. It's a giant action scene. Then we're going to cut to like a year before, and then we're going to get the whole entire story of the Fantastic Four, how they got their powers, yada, yada, yada. And then we'll jump over the Mole Man and like, you know, like, because that was just a pre-opening thing, but it will really be Galactus will be the final thing. And it'll be Silver Surfer because Silver Surfer, she's the Herald, right? So they'll be dealing with her at the same time that they're dealing with family issues. Finally, Galactus comes, like you said, he's going to be very much like, I wonder if it's going to be very much like the way that the first Guardians used Thanos. Like, I wonder if it's going to be in that kind of regard, but a bigger scale version of it, like a longer through line where it's not going to just be all just sitting there talking.
So, I don't know if I, so can I theorize?
Sure.
I'm worried that my theorizing is going to spoil something because it has in other things, like in other conversations with other people. But my theory is that this, one of the reasons we're only getting a Fantastic Four movie before we get into Avengers Doomsday and Avengers Secret War is that, and the reason why this movie looks like it looks, the way it is what it is this movie is not going to end well.
I don't think that you're wrong in that. I think that the shocker is going to be like first steps. Like, okay, so first steps to me is like, it's like the Thunderbolts with the star on it or the astronaut on it. I feel like it has a different meaning. And I think the first step is actually going to be more like first steps towards Doomsday. Right. Like, and if you have going like this, basically win at the end and destroy the planet and the Fantastic Four are like off in like limbo land going into the multiverse, trying to stop what is inevitable. Like, this is the first steps that they're trying to stop the inevitable destruction of the universe. That kind of is like the kind of thing that I feel like it's kind of great, right? Like, it's kind of like a misdirect.
I mean, it's Rogue One, right? We're on this mission. We're going to defeat Empire. And it's like, what the fuck? Everybody dies at the end? Like, what is happening?
Exactly.
But, you know, I do think we're in for, like, if that's the case, it will be that Reed finds a way to save his family. Like, and unfortunately, he can't save the world, but he can save his family. Which will bring them to the MCU proper. So here's the thing about Galactus in the comics. The reason Galactus is who he is the way he is the last survivor of the previous universe. So the idea that Big Bang happens, universe expands, keeps expanding, and there's this theory that eventually it will retract back into itself and collapse and then explode again, creating scattering matter, creating a new universe. So with that theory in mind, the origin of Galactus became he is the only survivor of the previous universe that contracted. Big Bang happens again, Galactus exists, and it's created this like hunger in him, and he just goes around like eating worlds, you know, absorbing that energy because he needs it to survive. And so if that's the through line, then that's really interesting that somehow he's going to collapse this universe, or they're going to cause him to collapse this universe and create another universe, or send them into another universe. So
that makes sense. Like, that really does make sense. And it also like kind of goes with the Reed Richards scientific, like the whole thing of like, have you seen the whole people are already looking at like clues and stuff, and they can see on his whiteboard he has a drawing of a wormhole through multiverses. So that would go along lines with what you're talking about.
So my other theory is, and I don't know how much they're going to get into the origin of the Silver Surfer, because it would seem like a lot more to add to this movie, which I expect it to be long, but I don't expect it to be 3 hours long. Like,
no,
2.5 tops.
Maybe.
So the Silver Surfer is Norn Rad, who his planet was, you know, on the chopping block from Galactus. He bargains with Galactus to be this herald and find other worlds for him to devour that will satiate his hunger in exchange for sparing his world. And he has, I guess, depending on the story, sometimes it's just this woman that he loves, sometimes it's his wife, I think, like Shalabal. And
yes.
So the fact that we know that Silver Surfer is going to be female makes me think that we might be getting that story swapped, and Norn Rad is not the Silver Surfer, and that it's Shalabal.
Which makes sense.
Yes.
Like that would be like a very interesting way of doing it, because it does, like, again, and this is all multiverse where it leaves it open for for things to come back in the traditional manner in which they were initially presented. So like if Silver Surfer, if they ever want to go back to Silver Surfer, they can, and do do Norn Rad, right? Like, and have a Shalabal, like, Silver Surfer still in the universe. Like, have them both be the Silver Surfer, just different versions of them. That makes sense. That really does make sense. And also, the other thing is, I recently did a rewatch of the Silver Surfer TV show, the animated one.
the old Fox show?
Oh, yeah. Because it's on Disney Plus.
Yeah. And there's not many episodes, right? 13, maybe?
13.
Yeah.
The first episode spends so much time with Norn Rad. And then I started to do a little bit of research because, like, you know, it was interesting because Shalabal is there. Here's another like kicker that you probably knew that I didn't know that blew my mind. There was like a storyline like in the Fantastic Four where she was basically Victor Von Doom's wife. She was trapped in the Latverian girl's body, and she ended up becoming Dr. Doom's wife.
Oh, nice.
Like that adds a wrinkle into there, because it's like, if you're doing the Shalabal of it all, what's to say that she doesn't get stuck? And that's kind of the entryway into Doom.
Yeah.
Because we know the end, Doom shows up.
Yeah. I was about to say there's a pretty good chance we see Doom in this movie, right?
Yes.
So.
Oh, absolutely. I feel like he's the end credit sequence. It won't make a bit of sense. It won't make a lick of sense, but I feel like he will be there, and he will be the person that is like the machinations, right? Like he's the one that is pulling the strings that ends up being like, we see it like, oh, okay. It's not, like, you know, it's not Galactus. Galactus is just a stupid planet eater. Like the real villain of this all, the one that's been pushing everything, is Doom. Because if you think about it, if they can pull it off right, and like he's in like the final like 2 minutes, and it makes it appear like he got the Planet Killer to kill off this universe. Like, that sets the tone. That's better than anything that Thanos has ever done, right?
So, yeah, I agree. And, I mean, but there's also the chance that, like, Avengers Doomsday is not set in the MCU proper. Like, exactly. There's also that chance. And so it actually winds up being a sequel to the Fantastic Four. I don't know. Like, there's a lot they could do there. I know a lot of people are maybe a little sick of the multiverse stuff, but
I feel like this is like it's all been set up and this is paid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I feel like like everything that we've seen that really deals with the multiverse, which is really not that much. Like, really, it's Loki that's dealt with the multiverse. If you really think about it, like, that and what else has dealt with the multiverse in a strong way? Yep. I can't think of anything else. You kind of get the payoff that we've been building towards, which is, like, the building blocks of whatever this is. And I think that you're right. Like, it could very well be that Doomsday is a sequel to Fantastic Four that we just don't realize it is. And we're really getting multiverse stuff setting up for eventually what is essentially, like, hopefully a Secret Wars. Because, yeah, I mean, that's kind of, like, we all kind of want, right?
The Secret Wars thing they seem to be, like, leaning towards is like this combination of universes and like all of these people kind of like in the same place. I'm here for that. There's just not a lot of runway to get to that point. And I realize if you're taking in like old universes, like even like the old Fantastic Four stuff, like, that, much like Deadpool Wolverine, like, that's pre-built runway. Like, you don't, like, have to give those characters anything other than, like, their moment in the sun in a movie like that. But how you get to that is that, like, we only have Fantastic Four, and then, I mean, is the next movie Avengers Doomsday?
Let me see here. Yeah. And then in between Secret Wars and Doomsday is the Spider-Man No Way Home.
So
supposedly right now it's Fantastic Four First Steps, Avengers Doomsday, Spider-Man, which is like literally comes out like 4 months or 3 months after Doomsday, and then Secret Wars the next year in May. So, like, literally, you could be right, because, like, here's the thing is that Waldron's writing for the Russos, Waldron and McFeely are writing. It's not McFeely and who's the other guy?
Marcus.
That they love using? Marcus, yeah. Marcus and McFeely. I feel like Marcus McFeely sounds like a name for somebody, right? Marcus and McFeely are not writing. It's Waldron and McFeely. And everybody knows Waldron is the multiverse guy, right? And McFeely is the Avengers guy. So you put them together, it feels like, maybe this is a traditional sequel to Fantastic Four, but it's done in a way that it's an Avengers movie and you have like your Avengers cast in it. Right.
But right. So did you have your film, you almost had to have been filming concurrently, even though I know that movie doesn't come out till 2026, but I don't know. I wonder if it's going to get pushed, man.
I don't know. Maybe, but also we don't know if they're filming.
Yeah. Fantastic Four, it's been secretive, but not super secretive. Doomsday feels very secretive. I don't know where they're at, and that movie is a little over a year away. I don't know.
The Russos, are working on The Hottest State or whatever they're fucking Millie Bobby Brown. That's been in post for, a year because it's so, effects intensive.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised if they've already started.
The Electric State? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, The Electric State. Yeah.
That trailer is intriguing to me. I know it they don't have a good track record outside of Marvel, but that trailer does intrigue me. So, yeah, you're right. It's been in post for a while, like to the point that like I think had their track record been like if they would not get to make that movie now based on their track record.
Oh,
like
no.
That movie was based on like their Infinity War Endgame stuff where it's like, oh yeah, here's some money, go make this movie. And then now that they've had like a string of like, you spent how much and this is what we got?
$300 million on the Kree Man, and literally like it's just a smoke filled nothing. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that they like, I wouldn't put it to past everybody that they are, that they have been filming, and we just don't know that they've been filming, because he has just gotten better, and you just kind of keep. Holland's mouth.
Yeah.
And the way you do that is that you don't give him a script and you don't film with him until you absolutely need to.
Yeah.
Everything.
That's kind of how they did a lot of like the other movies. Like there were a lot of stand-ins. I don't think people realize that.
Yeah.
That, you know, people can kind of take that the wrong way. Like, oh, Robert Downey Jr. couldn't be on set. But, like, they can film those things where they don't have to have those actors, where it's just people in costumes. And, like, they can film that a lot quicker and a lot more secretively than,
than people realize. Like, literally, like, so...
We all knew, like, even though everybody denied it, like, we all knew that there were three Spider-Men in that Spider-Man movie. Like, even going into it, we're like, maybe not. But, like, Andrew Garfield had been seen. Like, Tobey Maguire had been seen. Like,
exactly.
There was no, like... So Robert Downey Jr. being somewhere, he's going to get seen. Like, those people are going to be seen. So when you're filming stuff and it's just not Iron Man in this case, but whoever in a costume, like, and you don't need that actor there, it's a lot easier to film secretly than it is to be like, well, here comes Robert Downey Jr. and... The 12 people that are always following him and his car and his trailer and like all of that stuff. So,
well, have you heard the rumor that he has his own little movie studio inside of his house? Like, yes. he has a set, like he has like a green screen set. So like, what's to say that the Russos just don't go over to RDJ's house and they do a volume shoot? Like, that's the thing that I think that people don't realize about how secretive these things are now, because they don't want to ruin things because everybody wants to ruin things. And this week, all of a sudden we started getting news bits from Chris Evans. It'd be nice, but I'm not coming back. Oh, yeah. You absolutely are fucking coming back. We now know.
Yeah,
you
now, that just makes it seem like it's more confirmation. Like, saying you're not feels like confirmation. Now, if he isn't, and it winds up he's not in any of those properties, and like then, it will be kind of disappointing. But, like, okay, man, we've been in this, like, exact place before. With a lot of people saying, no, I'm not in it. It might be nice, but I'm not in it. Like, okay. Like,
sure.
And it'll wind up being like, it won't be in Doomsday, but like by the time we get to Secret Wars, it won't be somebody like Jessica Alba who's like, I'm not. She'll be the one being like, no, I'm not in it. It'll be somebody tiny from. One of those, I'm trying to think of somebody that would wind up like what's the name? From Elektra being like, oh yeah, I filmed something for Deadpool, and they're like, no.
Yeah. Well, or it's the best performance that Wesley Snipes ever gave was Wesley Snipes denying and actually going hard on
fucking, I hate Ryan Reynolds. Ryan,
yeah, I fucking hate Ryan Reynolds. He's a piece of shit. You're like, I should have been involved in Deadpool Wolverine, and all of us going, damn, this motherfucker going hard on this guy. Why would he ever include you? You're a piece of, oh, I'm sorry. Like, we were all wrong. You just did the performance of your fucking life. That kind of shit. Like because who wants to ruin, like, okay, so, like, here's the thing. It's like, I hate fucking news outlets like these. They're not even news outlets. These little sites that, like, just want to get their fucking $500 of ad money. Because it's like, I don't want it to be ruined that Cap says Hail Hydra at the end of Doomsday.
Yeah. I mean, even if I know it's going to be there, don't ruin it for me. Yeah. But, you know, if he's in it and like, oh, it's like, oh yeah, there's a good chance it's going to be in there. So yeah, I'm with you. I don't know. Like, it's weird. Like, I'm excited for Cap next week.
Mm-hmm.
I am beyond excited for Thunderbolts. I'm stoked for Daredevil. Like, everything they're doing right now. But Fantastic Four, like, it's the one that I'm like, how are they, like, I think they're going to pull it off, but, like, how are they going to pull it off and lead to the next, like, phase, like, because we're so close. And
yes,
of all the things that I'm excited about to see in Fantastic Four, that's the one that I'm just like, yeah, I gotta see how they, because I mean we felt that way about the Infinity War and Endgame.
Yeah,
like, how are they gonna pull this off? And they did. But going back to what I was saying earlier, the thing about that is they had a lot of runway, man. Like,
they did, but
this does not, because they've been so trying to set up other things that haven't necessarily succeeded, you know, like,
yes, it's true. Like
the Eternals. So I don't know, man.
But also, okay, so, like, I'm going to pose something to you, which is that, so Avengers movies are now 3 hours long. That's a lot of storytelling you can do.
Yeah.
We don't know how long Fantastic Four is. We don't know the story that they're telling and how they're telling it. But also, like, and there's been a lot, like, we've heard there has been a lot of change on that in that movie. They specifically went to Matt Shankman after they had multiple different directors on it and chose him. A guy who's dealt with Loki and the timeline, like, exclusively. Like, that's what his big thing is, right? Like, WandaVision and Loki. Like, so we have that, right? We have this, and we also have whatever Cap is. Because they've said Cap does tie into like Avengers Doomsday and Fantastic Four, to which, to your theory of everything is in a different alternate universe, there's nothing that says that this is, and then also Thunderbolts with the asterisk. Now I'm starting to think that maybe the asterisk, because Thunderbolt, like, okay, so, like, go with me on this one. What if Captain America is in an alternate universe, just like Fantastic Four is? And the reason why Thunderbolts has that asterisk in it is because it really is Thunderbolt Ross's Thunderbolts, but it's not the Thunderbolts that we know. Like, or it's not.
I mean,
the
that would be a hell of a thing to get to Captain America and it not be set in MCU proper.
I know, but the Red Hulk of it all, and that's and also the thing that they're finally starting to get to is the leader. We don't know the purpose of the leader. Like, they've been hiding that a lot. I don't know. Like, they keep on saying that it's all going to make sense, and it's not making sense because we haven't seen it yet. But also, like,
I'm saying there's not a lot of runway, but that's me assuming that Cap and Thunderbolts aren't going to feed into what Avengers Doomsday will be.
Exactly. And the Thunderbolts asterisk, and he's like, it'll all make sense. The asterisk, I feel like, okay, so like, here, go with me on this. The Thunderbolts are named Thunderbolts because they are Thunderbolt Ross's, like, basically his anti-Avengers, right? Or his Suicide Squad. But they're not being ran by, like, from what we can see in the trailers, they're not being ran by Thunderbolt Ross for whatever reason. It's Valentina. So what's to say that, like I said, this isn't a universe that, like, okay, what if this is, like, what if we are seeing an alternate universe where at the end of Cap, that Cap doesn't win, and somehow the leader wins, and then it leads into the Thunderbolts, which is a universe in which, like, it's the same universe where, like, I'm just saying, like, I'm just spitballing here, it's probably not the case, but the Thunderbolts are there, and they're enacting. They are a new squad because the Avengers don't exist.
I mean, that would damn sure be interesting.
Yeah,
there's a few things that, like, they need to do to wipe some things off the slate. Like, yes. I hate that we're not going to get follow up on Eternals. But also, the Eternals was not remotely interesting. Like,
but also, so, we get the biggest question from, like, it looks like we're getting the answer.
Yeah.
The biggest question from the Thunderbolts, or I'm sorry, from the whatchamacallit in Cap is, yeah, what the fuck with the, well, with the giant ass?
You gotta wipe away the Eternals. You gotta wipe away the Secret Invasion. Because, yep, it's like, not only did it suck, but you created a character in Secret Invasion that's literally more powerful than anyone else. And what are you going to do with that, man? And, I mean, you don't need to wipe away Shang-Chi, but if you're not going to do anything with it, you got to make it where it doesn't matter. You know, like, that sounds terrible, but, like, I hope they don't, like, wipe away Shang-Chi, but definitely Secret Invasion and Eternals, because you're not going to follow up on those things because A, they weren't successful, and B, they don't fit a lot of what you're doing. So you got to find a way to wipe them off the board so those questions don't come up. Rebooting the multiverse is a way to do it. There's also something could happen in Fantastic Four that doesn't lead to the death of their universe, but somehow brings other people from the multiverse into their universe, which would also be really interesting. Yes. And give you that opportunity of, like, yes, Avengers Doomsday is a sequel to Fantastic Four, and it's set in the universe of this Fantastic Four, but with characters from the multiverse. And so that might be interesting. I don't know. It's all just theories. And I mean, it's nice that we're back in this place.
Yeah. Where we
know
don't,
what I mean?
Where we don't know what's happening.
And we're excited for, like, oh, what are they going to do with this? Oh, what are they going to do with that? Like, it is nice to be back in this place and not be like, yeah, I heard they're doing this, and God, they're going to screw this up too. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And what I'm most excited for, which I know it sounds weird, is Dr. Doom. Because I don't think that we're going to be getting the traditional Dr. Doom.
No.
Like, I feel like we're going to get green. Like, I know that sounds crass, but just go with me on this. I think that we're going to get green Iron Man.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, he's like, his suit is going to be very, like, I feel that whatever Dr. Doom is, he will be a play on Tony Stark, and almost like an alternate version of Tony Stark. And we will have, like, again, that's why I feel like we're gonna get Cap saying Hail Hydra, because yeah, whatever, wherever he's coming from, because we, like, I honestly think that Doom is, I mean, gonna be from the multiverse.
A Fantastic Four movie where there's like the universe where, like, the super soldier serum doesn't wind up in America's hands, and like Hydra and the Nazis create their super soldier and using an American brainwashed soldier, like, and that's, yeah, what happens in the universe that we see the Fantastic Four in. Like, that's kind of exciting, man.
It is. It very much so is. And it gives you the, like it gives you like Avengers Doomsday being like the, like, if, so like if this is a trilogy that starts with the Fantastic Four and ends with Secret Wars, that makes Fantastic Four, Star Wars, Avengers Doomsday, Empire, and Secret Wars Jedi. And it works. Yeah. And then you get in between, you get like the Rogue One of Spider-Man No Way Home sequel, whatever it's called.
Yeah, I it just, like I said, honestly, it feels really good to be back in this place of, like, not thinking how are they going to screw this up, but thinking how are they going to pull this off.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, yeah, it's nice to be excited about Marvel again. It's nice to be excited about DC again, but we have a lot less DC stuff on the slate this year than we do Marvel, so, yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait to see more, even though I don't need to see more. And, you know.
And we've got, like, the thing that we haven't even talked about is that we've got on the horizon after this, we've got an X-Men film or an X-Men thing that's going to be this. But then we also got Black Panther with Denzel.
Yeah.
Like Coogler writing for Denzel and inspired enough to come back to Black Panther, and also them shutting down, Nate Moore shutting down, absolutely saying that they're not going to recast, T'Challa, which feels like, means that I feel
there's
like
so much of that going around. I was like, where the hell is this coming from? If they didn't do it for Wakanda Forever, like, why would they do it now? I know that movie was not the success they wanted it to be, but again, when you take into account all this shit that happened, like, that they still got to make a movie and it still mostly works, it, that makes it a success, you know?
I already let's be honest. We know who's coming back. We fucking know that Michael B. Jordan's coming back.
Yeah.
He's gonna, like, they've already kind of set the path and the expectation in the What Ifs, that you could have Michael B. Jordan come back as Killmonger, but maybe possibly a good version of Killmonger.
Yeah.
Or even if he's a bad version, you get the multiverse version of him. And
I think you'll get a good version, a you know, good hearted version of him.
Version of.
Yeah.
Cause I feel like after all of these, then with Denzel, and Denzel had seen do you remember that Denzel had offhandedly said, like, I just saw, Coogler showed me his latest movie and I loved it. Like, he just, like, kind of said it offhand. And I was like, does this mean that this motherfucker's coming back? Like, is Michael B. Jordan coming back with Coogler? Like, which makes sense to me.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know what? Just bring him back. We know that he died, but you know what? He's the only person that could probably carry this unless you want to recast. And you don't want to recast. Like, at least at this point in your
the multiversal thing, and like once post Secret War, once we're out of the multiversal thing and they've reset the MCU to, you know, a more proper state. Like, yeah, yeah. You can have like, oh, he exists in this universe and, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's exciting, man.
Yeah. And I can almost, I can tell you exactly the story is that, like, it's Killmonger rebuilding Wakanda.
Yeah.
I guarantee you Wakanda gets destroyed even more so than it did in the sequel, in the original. And it's him rebuilding Wakanda to its prominence and power. And all of the trouble that, like, it's an easy fucking story to, like, it's not an easy story to tell, but it's the thing that you go, oh, if you add that in, like, and it just gets me excited. Like, we're talking about what ifs and not, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, and like you said, like, I'd much rather be in this place than in the other place of like, yeah. Oh God, how are they going to fuck it up now? And
yeah,
kind of exciting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we'll see. I mean, only time will tell, but like I said, it just feels good to be excited as opposed to like, oh God, they're going to mess this up too.
Yeah. And all right. We'll know more next week. We'll know more next week.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
Literally, we'll have the movie.
This is our, you know, we ended last year, the last half of last year with some really good Marvel stuff. But yeah, this will be the first true test because Deadpool Wolverine, like, was always going to be the big, like, it was always going to be what it was. And
yeah,
it feels weird to call it an MCU movie. Agatha, great, but enough people didn't watch it. And you know, What If, we thought was really good. And so Spider-Man off to a decent start, but that's not MCU. So this will be the first real big screen test of them. Like, do they have it back? And I'm going to say, I don't think this movie will be a blockbuster success. I unfortunately don't.
No, I don't think so either.
I'm not, that's not what I'm. Like, I need it to work. I just need it to work.
Quality movie. Quality movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll find out. That's definitely what we're talking about next week. So until then, go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com, or you can read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes. TheMovieHowl.com, where Logan, like right now, like until, unless this posts a little bit later and you're listening to this later, Logan's year in 2024 review is at the top of the page, and in true Logan fashion does not do a top list, but rather does a recounting of his
year.
It's
like a diary.
Yeah, it's great though, dude. Like, I loved it all. Like, it was all kind of great.
Here's what I was doing, and here's how I felt when I watched these movies. So
exactly. It's always great to get these from him because they're so different than your top 10 lists. That's up on the site right now. I'll have some stuff this week. It's going to be interesting because I'm going to be diving into two of my favorite John Candy movies, because they're being released by, Kino Lorber. So I'm going to get to watch Summer Rental and Uncle Buck, and I'll be reviewing those. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. So you can read those this week as well. And we'll be back next week with Captain America. It's Talking Captain America, which I'm very excited about.
Me too. Can't wait. We'll see you guys then. Number 4, Mario. Number 5, Weird Al. Number 6, Batman. Number 7, Kal-El. Number 8, Simpsons. Number 9, TV. Number 10, every single band that I stole all their MP3s. But before they all sold out, see it all together if you're with me now. Nerds.